Welcome to the Issue Is bonus podcast. Now, the 25th congressional district race has been one of the closest in the country. You've got Congressman Steve Knight running against Katie Hill. You see the ads all over the place all the time. Congressman Knight won back in 2016. Hillary Clinton won this district back in 2016. This has been a big focus for Democrats to see if they would be able to knock Congressman Knight out. We've been requesting an interview with him for a very long time. He finally agreed to do one this week. We also talked to Katie Hill. So I want to give you some bonus content, some of these sort of lengthy interviews with both of them to help you make up your mind. Let's begin with Congressman Knight. I'm joined now by Congressman Steve Knight. Thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you, Alex.
So talk to me. This is the final stretch. The most important thing you want somebody to think about when they go into the voting booth.
Oh, I think that we've said it all along that there is a record of accomplishment, and we have done exactly what we said. We said we would work on the military and on veterans care. We said we'd work on small business. I've done that. I brought a new program to this district for veteran care that is unlike anywhere else in the country. No one else has it, only the 25th Congressional District and a little bit of Kevin McCarthy's. So veterans can get care right in their district. We brought a new grant to widening the 5 freeway to work on the traffic congestion that goes up through Santa Clarita that affects Simi Valley, affects Antelope Valley, affects all of Southern California. And I've worked on small business. Most of my legislation has addressed small business. Here in Simi Valley, it's Small Business Central and across our district. So I've done what I said I was going to do, and I know the people are happy with accomplishments. And I think that's the biggest difference.
The veterans care thing, how does that work?
So the veterans care, if you get covered by the VA, you call into a triage nurse, and the triage nurse says, okay, you can go to a CBOC, which is a community-based outpatient clinic. There's only a couple. If you can't go there, you might have to drive from Simi Valley or from the Antelope Valley up to 60 miles to get care. Our issue is we put urgent cares that are right here in the district. The veterans can just go there. So if the triage nurse says, you need to go to an urgent care, but you can't go to the CBOC because it's crowded right now, go to the urgent care that's 2 miles from your house. It is a new program. We work directly with the VA. The VA is liking this program. They think that this is something we can model across the country, and this is the pilot.
The other big issues, certainly across the country, tax reform,
right.
Healthcare. Let's start with tax reform. Your feeling about that, because a lot of people say, including your opponent, that the Republican tax plan is bad for Californians because it got rid of state and local tax exemptions. It's really helped a lot of people in this district.
Yeah, so I think that there are issues that are going to come up on Taxes 2.0 and Taxes 3.0 that a lot of us from California, New Jersey, New York, the high tax states, really put a lot of input in there. But let's look at the tax reform package as a whole, too, that affects here in California. Our economy is rolling like no other. We have 3.7% unemployment. We have more jobs right now than we have people to fill them. That sounds like a good thing, but it's a bad thing if you don't have the training behind that. So our next step is to actually get more training so that we can find the person that can take the job, get them trained, and get them into the job as fast as possible. So the Tax Reform and Jobs Act has been working, and it's been working right here in this district. And the last thing I'll say is, and we talked about this before, we put this in about 50 different ways in our district. And it worked out every time for the families of low income and middle income. And that means are people who are making $40,000 all the way up to making $110,000 to $150,000. They got a tax break. So it is working.
So you're proud to support that?
Yes, yeah. Yes.
And then the Republican health care bill, also a huge thing around the country too. Did you vote for it?
So I voted for the AHCA, yeah. Yes.
You know, your opponent would say that gets rid of pre-existing conditions, protections for people, that it's a big negative. What do you say?
Yeah, my opponent would love to use this as a political kind of stepping stone for her. But the fact is, she knows I am the person who wrote a bill for pre-existing conditions. My bill says pre-existing conditions cannot be taken away in any form of coverage. So if we kept the ACA, or if we went to the AHCA, or we went to a hybrid, or anything, pre-existing conditions would always be counted. In other words, they would always be covered. My bill is that. We have a ton of Republicans that have signed on to this bill. I bet you on November 7th, I'm going to get a ton of Democrats that will sign on to this. They know this is a huge political issue right now. They love the bill, but nobody's going to sign on until after the election. My opponent knows this. She knows that this is a good bill. But I think that healthcare is starting to get some good discussion between Republicans and Democrats, how we can lower prescription costs, more affordability, more accessibility.
You know, the whole thought behind Obamacare was that if you had this mandatory thing that people had to, that would pay for the pre-existing
right.
conditions.
Right.
How do you pay for that if you take away all of that other stuff?
Right, and we've seen that you can't pay for it. It's moving across the country that premiums have gone up so much that you're not going to be able to pay for it. And I understand my constituents here in the 25th that say, well, covered California is working better than other states. I said, that's true. We have the biggest economy. But remember, this is a federal program, and it will be pulled down by other states. So we've got to have a healthcare system that works for everyone, that is affordable, and has more products. More products is a good thing. We get more coverage. We get more options. I think we're getting there, though. I really do. I have good optimism toward moving forward with our health care.
There's this ad that's running on TV now that says that you think that Social Security isn't a good thing. Or is that true? Is that a fair statement of your position?
So a couple of years ago during a debate, I made a bad statement. And I've admitted that, and I've said it was just a bad thing to say. They asked me about Social Security, and they asked me in a whole light. And I said a bad term, and then I explained what I said. And everyone in the room was nodding their head after I explained what we should be doing with Social Security. And in 1968, basically, Congress said we can borrow against Social Security. And for 50 years, we've been doing that. Mm-hmm. That's where I was going with this. And I understand that people will run that as a political ad. But the fact of the matter is, I've been in for two terms. I've gotten awards for Defender of Social Security both terms. People know that I am a huge supporter of Social Security. I think it should be there for this generation, the next, and the next. And remember, I'm the next one to jump on. And if you're paying into a benefit, mm-hmm. that benefit should be there when you become of age. And I've said that all along. People in this district know that. They know that politics get ugly. But they also know I'm a huge supporter of Social Security and Medicare.
The last time around, 2016, you weren't the hugest supporter of President Trump, but you've now said that you voted for him. Mm-hmm. He says that he's really on the ballot, that in all these races that you're really voting for him. And Democrats say, see. What do you think of the president? Is he doing a good job?
I think he does a lot of things really good. I do. Like any president, I wouldn't agree with him 100% of the time. When President Obama was in, I served under him for 2 years. Nobody ever asked me a question about, do you support the president at that time? But if President Obama did something good, I would say it's good. If he did something bad, I would say it's bad. I've been very vocal with President Trump, whether it be the families at the border, the tariffs on solar, the tariffs on newspapers, how we go about immigration. I mean, I could list on and on about if I've been supportive or not supportive of what the president is doing. Remember, I'm the representative for this district. I'm the 25th congressional congressman. That's what I do. And if I think that it's helpful for this district, I'm very happy to say thank you. And if I think that it's not, then I'm also very vocal to say we shouldn't be going in this direction. But remember, we have a very vibrant economy right now,
sure.
And things are starting to roll in a very positive direction.
And sort of following up on that, in that theme, you know, the Republicans have control of the House, the Senate, the presidency, and some would say the Supreme Court now. Do Republicans deserve to win re-election, and why?
Oh, yes, I absolutely believe that Republicans deserve to win re-election. I think they deserve to stay in power. We've seen the economy go from 8 years of stagnation to where our average growth was about 1.8%, to now our quarters are over 3%, and it's just kind of like the norm now. We're seeing unemployment go to historic lows. We're also seeing policies that are around the world are taking effect. Now, you can say whatever you want about KJU or some of the things that the president has said about these leaders. But if we started this conversation 12 months ago, the first question you would ask me is, are we going to go to war with North Korea? And today, it's not even a question I get asked about. Mm-hmm. So these policies are starting to work. And, you know, some people might not like how the policy is being placed, but you can't really argue that it is working. And the
it's
fact
it's not working.
You can't. Yes. Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
But I think if you go back to elections in the past, people look at, boy, am I better off? Do I have a better chance of getting a better job or keeping my job or my kids having a job when they get out of high school or college? The fact of the matter is they do.
But I think the counter to that, a lot of people feel like it's more than just the economy. They feel like the president is a little bit out of control, that there needs to be a check on the president. They wonder about some of his statements. They wonder about some of the stuff he's maybe criminal, and they don't necessarily feel like Republicans are doing an adequate job investigating him. So it's more than the economy.
So I've been very supportive of the Mueller investigation. I've been very supportive of working together with Republicans and Democrats. That's why I'm on several groups that are bipartisan to work on issues like immigration. So I think a lot of us have been vocal, and especially when you're in a district that is very close in registration like mine, you're trying to represent everyone. And not everyone loves the president, not everyone hates the president. And so you're trying to represent. And if he says something that I think is positive and is going to help, then we will say yes. I'm very grateful.
You know, Joe Biden likes to say, don't compare me with the Almighty, compare me with my opponent. So you're running against an opponent in this race. Sure. What do you make of her? What do you see as the biggest difference between you two, the contrast between you two?
Well, I try not to talk about my opponent, whoever my opponent is at the time. I really don't. I kind of look at the positives of what we've done, how I said what I was going to do and how I've achieved it. And being the local person, you know, people see me everywhere. I get stopped in Vons. I get stopped at my house. I'm stopped by neighbors that were trick-or-treating last night as I was handing out candy. So they see me as the local person that goes to Washington, D.C. 35 weeks a year.
Yeah.
And I think that's the biggest part of how I've kind of represented is that there's no way you can't be able to talk to me. Talk to my offices, talk to me. I send out my phone number. We have a news blast that goes out every 7 days. It's really a team effort of how much information we put out there.
But that being said, there still is a choice.
Sure.
From a policy perspective, what do you think is the most important distinction? What do you think is the most important difference that a voter gets when they choose Congressman Knight over Katie Hill?
Well, I'll just go back to our debates. My opponent said my father was in the military. Well, I was in the military. She says how my mother was a nurse. Well, my wife's a nurse. I mean, let's look at what the candidate does and not look at what the families do. The families are not going to serve in Congress. The candidate is. I'm a veteran. I was a Los Angeles police officer for 18 years. I've been in local government, I've been in state government, and now I've been at the federal government. I hit the ground running. The biggest issue when I came into office was the CEMEX mine in Santa Clarita. Within 8 months, we had turned around the contracts that they couldn't mine there in 8 months. For 22 years.
I'm sorry. Can we do that again?
Sure.
Yeah. The biggest issue when you came in was the mining.
Sure. Right?
Yeah.
So the biggest issue when I came in was the CEMEX mine. Within 8 months of me being in office, we turned around the contracts. They couldn't mine after those 8 months. Could not have a mine in CEMEX. Still cannot mine there. So I hit the ground running of knowing what to do and how to do it. In Sacramento, things work a little differently than in Washington, D.C. But they do fit together because it is politics and it is policy. Mm. I've done it at the local level, I've done it at the state level, and done it at the federal level. And I think that experience does help and it does count. But let's also look at a record of achievement, not just saying, well, he was there. I wasn't just there. I achieved. issues for the district.
Anything else? Any other sort of closing argument or anything else you want to leave us with?
Well, I would just say that, you know, when I went into Congress, I said I wanted to be on armed services. That was my number one goal, is to be on armed services. This is an aerospace district. Whether you're in Simi Valley, Santa Clarita, or the Antelope Valley, you have an awful lot of aerospace here. I believe that we need a strong military, and I believe that we need to take care of our veterans when we come home. And lastly, this is small business central. This district has so many small businesses. That's why I sit on small business. I'm the chairman of contracting and workforce development because of my district. So I've been very, very open to the district's needs, what they need, how can we achieve it, and then going and completing that mission.
It seems like every ad on TV is about this race, or like every other ad. The whole country is really focused in on this race in a way that it probably hasn't been before. How do you feel about that? And how do you feel about the state of the race? How do you feel just a few days away from election day? I mean, a lot of people have already voted.
So I feel very confident. I've already voted. I made the right choice. But I don't watch a lot of TV, so I don't see a lot of the ads, so it doesn't affect me. If I'm watching TV, I'm watching sports normally. So I don't see a lot of the ads, and I think that's a good thing. I think it's a good thing that I don't get overwhelmed by, holy cow, there's 100 ads out there every 3 hours. How can people make the right choice? But there has been a huge amount of effort in this, from New York City all the way into this district, of money and effort of trying to win.
So that was Congressman Knight. We talked to Katie Hill a little bit later on in the same day. She was out in Lancaster. Take a listen to what she had to say.
The most important distinction between you and Congressman Knight?
Most important distinction is that this is an opportunity to vote between politics as usual and something that's fresh, that's about bringing us together to really get things done on behalf of the people of our community. We have someone who has sold out to big corporations and special interests and party politics versus someone who has worked on the issues that matter most to us and who is accountable to voters and is going to get things done.
He says he's got a great record to run on. He points to success with getting some military and veterans funding for people here. He says the Republican tax plan is helping people here. He says the economy's strong in California, and he's proud of his record. What do you say to that?
You know, I think there are things that he's gotten done, and I'm not going to dispute that, but I think the things that people care most about, whether it's healthcare or a true economy that works for everybody, rebuilding the middle class, those have not been accomplished. And, you know, he touts this Republican tax plan, which we know actually did not help people of this community like he tries to say that it does. The health plan has not happened. We have not seen progress on that issue. And we hear over and over again people struggling with the cost of premiums, the huge deductibles that they're facing, the high cost of prescription drugs. And frankly, you know, I think what we see is that there are some accomplishments, right? But there has to be so much more. And those major issues that we have to address can't happen when you have somebody who votes with Donald Trump 99% of the time, who is going to do whatever his party says, and who is going to vote with the corporations that are funding his campaign.
So do you see Donald Trump as a liability?
I mean, I think that anyone who votes with a certain person or a certain party that consistently without really being able to show a distinction between themselves and what they're able to accomplish is problematic, you know? So I do think, you know, I have my own issues, of course, with Donald Trump, but I think that that's really what it is.
So if it's problematic, if you vote that much with your party, what do you not agree with your own party on?
Yeah, I mean, so a few things. The first is that I think you have the ability as a member of Congress to shape what your party does. And that's what we haven't seen from Steve Knight, right? So, you know, we have the opportunity to say, okay, let's just say we're tackling health care. How am I, as a member of Congress, using my voice and using the power that comes with being part of these swing districts and being someone who's representing a new face of Congress, how am I making sure that I am loud and am saying that these are the things that need to happen for our community, and these are the things that my expertise has to bring to the table. And, you know, I think what we see from Steve Knight is that he sits back and he ultimately takes the vote that, you know, Kevin McCarthy tells him to take. And that's, I think, the biggest problem.
He says that he sponsored legislation on pre-existing conditions.
on, you know.
Yeah, he didn't sponsor legislation on pre-existing conditions. He signed a letter that is not actually accomplishing anything. But previous to that, he had voted 9 separate times to repeal the Affordable Care Act without any kind of protections for pre-existing conditions. And he voted for the AHCA, the Republican version last year, that would have also gotten rid of protections for pre-existing conditions. So I think what you see is someone who has changed their tune as soon as they're in a tough race, and once he feels threatened. So what can we really count on? Is it somebody who is going to go whichever way the wind blows, or is it somebody who's been consistent on what they're going to stand for?
Your life story is interesting. Tell us a little bit about you.
Yeah. So I'm somebody who spent my entire life here in the district. I'm the daughter of a police officer and a registered nurse. I was not planning on going into politics. I spent my career running PATH, People Assisting the Homeless, which is the largest homeless services organization in the state of California. And through that work, I worked on affordable housing, homelessness, healthcare, including the Medicaid expansion, mental health, substance abuse. And probably the most important experience that I gained from that was the ability to bring people together to work on the toughest problems facing our society. And that's really what we need in leadership right now.
What are we doing here today?
So today we're bringing a group of people together, I was invited, to really talk about how we approach people who have experienced sexual assault. So it's law enforcement, it's healthcare providers, it's people within the community, and saying that, you know, the first step in trauma-informed care is saying that we believe you as the victim, and you're able to get better information. You're able to really start to say that this is, you know, now that we've talked about the Me Too movement, and, you know, personally as someone who's survived sexual assault, how do we take the next step in terms of how we talk about this and how we move forward, especially after something as divisive as Kavanaugh?
So you've survived sexual assault
mm-hmm.
yourself.
Yeah.
If you win, that's a sign that the Democrats have probably done pretty well.
Right.
And it probably means that there's going to be a Democratic House.
Right.
What does that mean for people? What real world, what does that look like?
Yeah. Well, I think what it really signifies is that people are insisting that we have something different. And what I think we need to look at is not just that this is a Democratic House, but who those new people are. And what we're seeing are more women, more young people, people who are saying from the very beginning that they're not taking corporate money, and that there's a different tone. There's a tone of saying that this is what we're about, and that politics as usual is not going to work anymore. So I would say it's not just about a Democratic House. It's about the people who are coming in. And I think, frankly, if that were coming from the other party, it could be just as effective, but it's not. So I think it's really about saying, like, these are the problems that we're hearing from our constituents that we need to start working on, and we need to elevate those. And hopefully the administration will start to work with us, and if not, then we've got 2020 that we've got to deal with.
It seems like your ads are on, like, every 5 seconds.
Some of them are ours, some of them are outside ads.
I mean, this race is really important.
Yeah.
It looks like you're close, or
yep.
maybe slightly ahead, depending on the poll.
Right.
Where do you see the state of the race right now?
I see it as it comes down to voter turnout. I mean, really, I see us as pretty much dead tied in what would be a normal electorate. But if we are able to get people to turn out to vote, and we're seeing the enthusiasm around that, we're seeing people who, you know, are saying that they're voting for the first time, or that they've voted in presidential elections but have never voted in a midterm, that because they're mobilized by this campaign, and sometimes it's by the political environment, it's by the administration. But what is most encouraging to me is people saying that this is a campaign that looks different and that really speaks to them. So it comes down to, are we able to turn out our voters? Are we able to turn out people who want to see change? And if so, then I think we win. But if we're not able to turn them out, then, you know, Steve Knight could very well keep a seat.
Yeah, and sort of last question. We're the same age, as we talked
yes,
about the other
yes.
day. There's sort of this new generation coming up. Does that matter? Do you feel like there that, and how do you think that'll impact policy?
I think it really matters. And I think the way that it impacts policy is that we have a perspective on what's going to happen 20 years from now, whether that's dealing with climate change, whether that's, you know, dealing with the fact that what happens with Social Security and Medicare, the affordable housing crisis, the student loan crisis, all of these things that need to be addressed that the current members of Congress and people in leadership positions have really just never even had to face, that they're not going to be here when these things come to a head. And so I think our generation feels a degree of responsibility and a sense of urgency that if we don't act now, what's going to happen? So I think we're at a turning point when people our age start to say, okay, now's the time. We've got to step up. We've got to start, you know, taking action. And I think this is exciting. So,
anything else you want to add? Any last words? Final argument? Anything else you want to say that we didn't talk about?
I think, you know, this comes down to a lot of people talk about the partisanship around this, but I really feel like this should be about what do we stand for as a community and what do we stand for as a country. And, you know, I think so much just within the last week has been about the violence that's come out of this sort of partisanship and the divisive rhetoric that's happening. And I believe so strongly, you know, coming from a half Republican, half Democratic family, that we've got to move past that if we're going to deal with these issues. And it's about our values, because more often than not, we share so much in common. We believe in the same fundamental things about who we are as a nation and what we're proud of and what matters for our kids and for our future. And so I think that I really sincerely hope that people can get past the D or the R and vote based on what they think represents the best possible future for all of us.
So there it is, Katie Hill and Congressman Steve Knight, one of the most expensive and one of the most competitive races in the entire country. Off camera, Congressman Knight called this seat a majority maker, suggesting that whoever wins this seat, that probably means their party has the majority in Congress. Proof of why it is so important to get out and vote in that race. Thank you for listening to a bonus episode of the Issue Is podcast. Hope you listen to the show this week and listen to all of our episodes by subscribing. Have a good one.